Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
All right, Keith Wood and Jerry Thorney of the Irish Times are here, lads. Happy New Year to you both.
And to you, Keith.
Many happy returns and all that malarkey. Sound very old every time we make those sort of comments, don't you? You know, you just turn into some bumbling.
Speak for yourself.
Well, I feel it, so I'll accept it. I'll take that myself.
The passage of time, you know, it's something that's coming for all of us.
Remorseless.
Eden Hazard just missed a very good chance for Chelsea. He has failed to score. It is still scoreless after 5 minutes in that game. We'll keep an eye on it. Munster at Racing live on Saturday at 3:40. Liam Tolan and Dave McIntyre are in Paris for commentary for that one. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first to the news that World Rugby have issued strict edicts to deal with high tackles. There are some think pieces doing the rounds at the moment, Jerry, suggesting this might be a huge moment in rugby history that actually we'll pinpoint, was it Tuesday when the edict was made, as a moment that the game was changed significantly. Maybe we're hoping for a bit too much. What's your take on all this, and maybe explain it to anybody who's a little bit behind in the story?
Well, it certainly had to happen. There has been an increasing preponderance of high hits. It's become much more of the essential fabric of the game than was the case, say, 20 years ago or 10 years ago. Ball and all tackles. It goes back to, I remember, maybe 1991 World Cup, Samoa, where it's very much synonymous what they were about, big hits. I remember going back to the hotel room after a game in Cardiff where they beat Wales in the World Cup, and they were replaying the match, and they weren't stalling and looking at their tries at all. They just kept rewinding and looking back at their big hits and complimenting each other on that, and it's very much part of their culture. And then I think the preponderance of rugby league defensive coaches brought in more ball and all tackles as well. And then you combine that with the increasing reported incidents of concussion, which were always there probably in the past and neglected, and rugby is becoming much more on top of this issue. But I think it came to a point where this had to happen. It just simply had to happen because it's one way of reducing concussion and making the game safer. And anytime you do that, it's a good thing for a sport. And there have been far too many high hits. And I know the crowd go ooh and ah, and it's very kind of it's part of the whole gladiatorial aspect of rugby. But there needs to be a bit of a balance. And as an aside, I think it might make the game more attractive.
Well, that's
make it more easier to offload the ball and the tackle.
So
I think there are lots of benefits to the sport.
Well, maybe it's not an aside. Maybe that's actually something that we should talk about, because the law of unintended consequences here is that perhaps the creative player won't feel like he's going to get a brain injury every time he runs into a tackle.
Yeah, that's for sure. And first of all, any sporting administrative body, its first primary duty of care is towards player safety. I accept your point. I think there will be benefits that go beyond that in terms of the way the game might flow, and it will be more feasible for players to get an offload away in the tackle and look for it. And I just hope it's enforced, and I think it will be. You see it in all sports, go through these little phases in its history. You're seeing it now with football at the moment, and players leaving the ground with 2 feet in the air, and people question whether it's a high tackle or whether it's a dangerous tackle, whether it's worth a red card or not. In within a year it'll become much more acceptable, and there'll be less and less of debate. The same as with an aerial challenge, there's a duty of care to the player in the air who's feeling the ball.
Yeah.
It's taken a while to evolve. I think now the same with this, the same with the tip tackle. You know, whenever there's an element of danger to players that creeps into a sport, the administrators have to do something about it. And history of all sports is littered with this.
Okay, so Keith, are you in favour of this as well? Do you think it's the right move? Do you think they're addressing the problem with a solution designed to address the problem?
I'm not entirely sure. I actually don't think it goes far enough, and I know some players and ex-players have come out and said they're trying to soften the game and soften up the game too much, and I would disagree with that fairly wholeheartedly. And I know there are more incidences of concussions now, and because we're far more sensitive to it, and we're, if you see anybody unsteady on their feet, they're immediately taken off. I remember having a long conversation with Barry O'Driscoll, Brian's uncle, in terms of the HIAs, the assessments, to say that if you are taking them off the field, it means there is a suspicion of concussion. And if there is a suspicion of concussion, there's no need for a HIA. They're off.
Yeah.
And they have to go through the protocols then. We've become incredibly sensitive to it, and I would say rightly so, actually. I just there are far more instances now, even notwithstanding the fact that we are looking out for it. The level of the tackle, as Gerry has said, all the way back from, was it the chiropractor Brian Lima in 91, to those higher level of hits across the chest, to
the shoulder on Jim Staples, dare I mention it.
But yeah, that wasn't a tackle, I suppose. the cleaving of some sort. To the choke tackle, to the rugby league tackling across the chest to stop the offload.
Will this kill the choke tackle, do you think? Because, I mean, there's a...
I think it pretty much has to. And it's funny, you know, because we're now at a situation in Ireland where we are... Our discipline at the high level of tackle is phenomenal. And it is at that point of... you know, the 3 and 4 penalties that we've given away in the autumn matches, we did an awful lot of choke tackles, an awful lot of relatively high hitting tackles that didn't transgress the law as it stands, and we did it incredibly well, and our level of efficiency was phenomenal. But I would say we are the best at that type of tackle, and it's for every other game that goes on and goes with it, and every other team that plays. I still, and I know we talked on this a few weeks ago, I still think that trying to have that level on that point of the shoulder just makes it very difficult for the referees.
Yeah.
And so we're now gone to zero tolerance. Well, zero tolerance means that a guy dips his head into the tackle, he's going to get hit, your man will get penalised. Anyway, he has to. Could even get yellow card or sent off, even if it isn't exactly right.
Yeah,
so that's an awkward one.
Well, let me ask you about that, because the unintended consequence, it's generally being seen as a positive thing. It might lead to more offloads and that kind of stuff. But the other one might be that players start seeking that contact, and there's the propensity to go down a bit, and you know,
and stay down.
Yeah. Guaranteed to do it. Guaranteed that's what the coaches would coach in many respects. You know, rule or law alteration, the coaches will figure out a way to make it suit them, or so that they don't get marginalised from it themselves. So that makes it a bit difficult for me. I would have brought it down lower with the view, and it's very, very tough, or even if it gets to the point of saying for the first time really that we need to make a substantive change to the laws between amateur rugby and professional rugby, just to take it and make it an awful lot safer. 76% was the number that said that came from the HIAs. 76% came from the tackle situation. Now, they're not all for high tackles.
Sure.
But
and
there are
the majority of them are actually the tackler as opposed to the tacklee.
Yes. But the tackler is the guy who sets the level, not the tacklee.
Of course, yeah.
And almost certainly it will lead to more red cards for a period of time, and therefore there will be more 15 against 14 matches and more distorted games, with the result known long before the end, because in rugby the imbalance of losing a player to a red card is even greater than it is in football. And there will be frustration amongst coaches and players afterwards, and there will be a perception of inconsistencies and whatever else, and maybe there will be a little bit, because referees are only human, have got a split second or two to make these calls a lot of time, even with TMO referrals that can help them. But you know, I think ultimately it'll make the sport safer, and that has to be a good thing.
Okay, well, let's move on to this game at the weekend, where Munster are back in Paris. Obviously, this is the game that was postponed following the death of Anthony Foley. It's just such a difficult situation for everybody involved, Keith. And I guess they've been through all the emotion and the grieving, and now they have to go back to the place this whole horrible thing happened. How do they even begin to deal with something like this?
Well, I'm hoping that this is the sort of the game and the weekend that almost squares the circle in some respects. It's been the most public of funerals and grieving and everything. And this is kind of maybe the drawing the line in the sand at the end of it, I think, for the players, because they were very affected from it, but for the family as well and everything else. Because the more we talk about it and the more it comes up in the press and the media all the time, the more it's brought front and centre. It's kind of difficult to relive it all the time.
Yeah.
And yet when you go to the players' perspective for it and how they're going to get back into it, they haven't dealt with this on a week-to-week basis. They haven't tried to play that raw line all the time. I think Razzie Erasmus has been fantastic in how he has dealt with this on many levels, actually, how he's dealt with it within the context of players, how he's dealt with it within the context of, you know, a favourite son of Munster passing away and the head coach passing away, and how he's dealt with it, that the team are not playing for Anthony. They're not trying to do it for Anthony. They're not trying to, but they're trying to do it in the manner in which he's played. So he's, or he wanted it played. So he had already engineered a one-step remove very, very quickly. So that took some of the emotional sting maybe out of it for the immediate match against Glasgow. And afterwards, because it wasn't heightened to the highest height, though it was heightened, but because he had it structured differently, they weren't having to try and get back up to that emotional level to perform, and they've performed incredibly well since, and have built on it and have used it as a catalyst to play at a higher standard than they had for a while, to play as a team, to be able to come together for something themselves, which is in the manner which Anthony wanted to play. I think they've done that very well. So for this game, it is one more of those, as opposed to the last step or the line in the sand. This is the game they have to go and do. The emotion of it will be a bit emotional because they'll end up in the same place, going to flying into the same airport, you know, all that similar sort of things. But they have to move that out of their mind entirely to try and focus on actually going to play a game, and playing a game that, if they were to take the emotional line, the best thing that they can do is focus fully on the game at hand. And that sounds very easy, but yeah, of course it's difficult. Of course,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. And yet they're strong favourites with the bookmakers. Is a 6-point spread. They're strong odds on to go to France and win a game. Granted, things at Racing at the moment just seem weirdly out of kilter.
Whoa, I'd be wary of that one. They've won 7 out of 7 at home. First of all, I just want to say that I've never agreed with Keith Wood so much in my entire life with everything he's just said there. I just utterly endorse that entirely. I think Razzy Erasmus has handled this brilliantly. They're not saying they're not trying to do it for Anthony. They're not trying to. They're embracing what Anthony stood for. And they want to play in a style that befits him and to the principles, and they're right. I think it's not opportunistic. I think it's very respectful. I think it's very fitting, and I think that, you know, what will be a truly haunting occasion for them, it's they have to acknowledge what it represents, what this whole match is about. To do otherwise would be silly and not respectful, and I think in many respects that's liable to bring the best out of them, because Munster are different. They've always been different. They handle emotional occasions differently from any other team I know in the world. It's why the sum of the parts adds up to more than the team. It's just what they're about. But I think going to Racing here, I think Racing are very dangerous. I think that no matter who, they might not pick Dan Carter or Maxime Machinot or Dimitri Sarzewski, but you look at the players in the squad who they will pick, and there'll be internationals. They'll bring in players like Casey Laulala. This is a time of the year when players in clubs like Racing Metro I've given a chance to earn a place in the starting team on a more regular basis, and also fighting for contracts. And a French team in a dead rubber at home is completely different to a French team in a dead rubber away.
Okay, I get that. But they've 0 points in the group at this stage.
Yep.
So, and they've already been beaten at home in this competition this year.
Yeah, they're only defeated at home in this season in any game, and they're 24 wins out of 26 in the last 26 home games. They can't pick up a point away from home, but at home they've been very consistently strong this season. And I tell you what, Ger, it so much will depend on the first 20 minutes, even without the likes of Carter or whatever. If they get an early scrum or an early maul or get a couple of kicks on the board or a penalty, it gets the home crowd into the game. They're emboldened, they're enlivened, and they're in the match, and it's game on. It doesn't matter. It's a game of rugby. It's about winning a match. They are far more likely to show pride in Racing Metro at home against Munster and what this fixture represents than, say, Northampton might have done at the Aviva Stadium against Leinster.
Yeah, okay. So that makes it very dangerous for them.
Very dangerous in what is effectively a must-win game, Ger, because when you actually look at the nuts and bolts of this group, by letting that win away get away from them in Leicester, if they lost away to Racing Metro, then their whole hopes are on the line, because Glasgow away looks their toughest of their away matches, and you certainly won't lose 3 away games and qualify for the last 8.
Yeah, no, for sure. From Munster's perspective, the Christmas period seems to have worked out relatively well for them in some respects, Keith, with maybe a couple of key injuries now beginning to mount for them in a way that they'd kind of been injury free for largely 2 months up to that point.
Yeah, I mean the results went very well. The game against Connacht was, you know, fantastic for them to get a win away. Connacht, of course, are shorn of, I don't know how many players at this stage.
22, apparently.
22. So that makes life very, very difficult for Connacht. And I know there's been a level of anger in terms of the way teams are selected or not selected. It's a long race, and this this competition is a long, long competition. There's no way you're going to have a full team or close to a full team for, I don't know, the top might be 65, 70% of games. That's it, maybe tops. That's just the nature of it. I think Munster managed their time well. They got it about right. Connacht were unlucky, actually, up in Galway. But, yeah, Munster annoyed, I'd say, with a couple of injuries. You know, Sweetenham getting injured. And I'm still a bit angry with the fact that there wasn't a card shown for that.
Completely.
I just think that was just very...
Nigel Owen said initially, Keith, that he was going to brandish a yellow card. He tackled a man without the ball, yellow card, and the TMO said no, he was committed to it, so Nigel changed his mind.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things now. Nigel always says that he's the boss and he shouldn't follow the line with the TMO, and he shouldn't have. And whether that was down to the view he had of the screen or whatever. But again, that's one of the elements of the sport that is a little bit uncomfortable for us, because we can hear the interchange that goes on. And for me, it doesn't matter. He committed to what? Tackling a guy without a ball. Sure, if you're committed and he doesn't have the ball, it's still a penalty. Mm-hmm. He could be committed all he likes, but you have to have the ball to make the tackle. So it should have been a card. But anyway, irrespective of that, Sweetenham gets injured and he's out for a few weeks, which isn't good for Munster, because I've been unbelievably surprised by his curve of improvement. For mistakes that he's made, small minor mistakes that he makes, he doesn't make them in the next game and doesn't make them since. Defensive frailties he had in the Leinster game at the start of the year, he just was entirely out to lunch in defence. He hasn't shown any sign of that laterally, and I just think he's been one of the huge successes for Munster this year.
Tommy O'Donnell also limped off with an ankle injury in that game. I haven't seen any prognosis on that, but that back row was playing really well.
Yeah,
that whole kind
got
of
a perfect blend to it. You know, Tommy got a really good poach against Leinster, which led to the last wave of attacks, which led to the Munster second try just before the break by Ronan O'Mahony, which was the pivotal moment of the four Christmas derbies, arguably the biggest moment. That all originated in Tommy O'Donnell steal. He's a really pacey carrier with the ball, and it's a nice blend with what the dog that O'Mahony brings and the hard carrying that Standard brings. He's just that little bit more dynamic, locating space and whatever else. And yeah, that's just a nicely balanced back row that they would miss. Tommy, you'd really want Tommy O'Donnell there. It's just another little caveat of concern about that. And also, as is the performance at Welford Road when they were just too error prone. But I do believe that if they show anything like the same level of accuracy to breakdown and patience that they showed against Leinster Thomond Park, that they will win this game. They'll eventually wear Racing Metro down. They'll just wear them down. If they are a little bit error prone like in Welford Road, they won't. But I'd expect a better performance than in Welford Road.
Gerry Flannery apparently spent some time learning at the hem of some coaching or some scrum gurus in the summer before Razzie Erasmus took the job, and since then, Keith, the Munster scrum has been incredibly solid. Their set piece, their line out, all the things that are the hallmarks of a very good coach team have been incredibly solid since Erasmus arrived.
Yeah, I think they've been very efficient in how they've gone about it, and I'll say that's not a phrase you use so much with Munster. But what they've shown, I think, with a full team, and that's one of the elements that we kind of gloss over every now and then, they've pretty much had a full team since the Glasgow game. Blaine Dahl had a few matches played under his belt at that stage, was kind of ready to play at this level. And I still feel he's feeling his way back in, yet I still don't think we've seen him play at 100%. But we look... I say we, Munster, look like they are, when they've the right temperament on the game, all those things, and Gerry talked about mistakes and elements like that, I felt Munster were a bit off the mark. Whatever it was mentally, were just whether they took anything for granted the previous week because they'd won so comfortably and they went over with an expectation of winning or whatever. They have had no expectation of winning any of the other games and have gone and have fought and have had their focus at 100% for the games. They were down off the mark against Leicester away. I think if they go and play with that real mindset that where our backs are against the wall, this is what they have to do, this is exactly the full level of of attitude and pace and contact and efficiency that's needed, then I think they'll work very well. Because, as you said, Jerry, their lineout has worked better. Their scrum at times, they fell asleep, I thought, a bit against Connacht. But their scrum has been excellent with John Ryan at tight end. Has really, really tightened up an awful lot on last year.
Been one of the players of the season, yeah.
And they actually do have a situation where they have got a little bit of depth, whereas last season they were bare bones for about 18 months. They were bare bones.
Jean Klein is a serious acquisition in the second row. I mean, his ball carrying against Leinster, he brings a hard edge to the tight five that they had to find from somewhere. Not that you'd ever replace Paul O'Connell, but you need that hard edge. You go through all the good Irish teams in Europe, whether it was Brad Thorne, Nathan Hines, John Langford. They all had that foreign import in the second row. They just brought that hard edge, and he's brought that. Jack O'Toole's obviously been an excellent signing. And you know, they've got Tyler Blaindell fit again this season. And then you've got real X factor in Conor Murray, who's as good a scrum half as there is around right now. And Simon Zeebo in the form he's in, and that telepathic understanding they have. The work rate he shows when they go looking for the ball. I just see a couple of times in the match where they will go through multiple phases and end up eventually penetrating where Racing down. I don't think Racing will, given they've nothing really tangible to play for, will have that same emotional energy and accuracy over a sustained period of time that Munster will do. And I'd hope that Blaindell would take his kicks as well, because that was a crucial aspect. They would have won in Welford Road if he'd taken his kicks.
Yeah. I mean, his
you've got to take your kicks away from home. But, you know, Jack Cardy missed two away from home as well in Wasps, and they were crucial. Away from home, you don't get as many chances. You've got to take them.
That's fair enough. Jordan and Galway, and you mentioned Jack O'Toole. I guess this is kind of one of the points that the Connacht fans are interested in. Would you ask the lads what they think of Connacht not being allowed by the IRFU to sign Mitch Lamb for free on a temporary contract? John Fallon had this story this morning in a couple of the newspapers, in the Indo, in the Examiner as well. Mitch Lamb is Pat Lamb's son, who has played for Connacht Eagles, who's played for Galwegians, and Pat needed somebody to play. He was going to get Mitch Lamb to play for 3 weeks as cover because of the injury crisis they have at the moment. And the IRFU said, no, he's a foreign player. He can't join you for 3 weeks. Pat Lamb said, it won't cost any money. He's my son. I'm not going to charge Connacht. And the IRFU said, no. It seems odd, right?
Well, I we've looked at this all along. It was funny. I was in commentary when Munster were against Leicester, and Jaco Tauta was just magnificent on the field, and Dave McIntyre said, well, look, they won't change it, and Eddie O'Sullivan said they won't change it, and I said, those rules are made to be broken. They're not laws. They're things that you need to be able to take a proper common sense approach to it. And I would have said that in the instance of Jaco Tauta, it has been a proper common sense attitude. I still feel the Pienaar one in Ulster is wrong. I still feel he should have been given another opportunity to play there. He was a guy who was pretty much had vested interest almost there. He had bought into it entirely. And in the instance of Connacht being stripped of players left, right and centre, there's a fear of setting a precedent at times, and that tends to hold back certain elements.
But maybe when you've got 22 players injured.
Saying at this instance, something has to be done for Connacht. You know, you can't argue, irrespective of how many players Connacht have or not or don't have, for 3 months or 6 months or whatever it is to get them out of the hole that they're in at the moment, and a totally depleted squad. You have to do something. That doesn't do anybody any favours. Now, I don't know, good, bad or indifferent on the decision, but it seems in the manner in which it's been discussed in the media as if it was dismissed out of hand. Well, I don't know that you can dismiss any notion out of hand at the moment when you've 22 players injured.
The three cases, you could argue they got them all wrong. Like, Ruan Pienaar sets up roots in Ulster for 7 seasons, wants to see out his contract here. That's a very unique case. I think when overseas international players come here to play within the Irish system and buy into the culture to such an extent that they actually want to spend a decade there, to then cut them off towards the tail end of their career sends out such a wrong message on so many levels to the Ulster fans, to the player himself and to prospective players to join the provinces. Jack O'Toole joined as a short-term replacement for Ancel Sahili. Sahili's now back fit again, and yet Tauti's been allowed to stay. I'm happy for Munster, but I don't quite understand the logic when set against Mitch Lamb, because when you've got 22 players injured, you know what the surefire next thing is? You're going to get a 23rd and a 24th and a 25th, because the strain on the squad becomes even greater. The same players have to keep rolling out. Even John Muldoon is out of this week's game. That ought to confirm more than anything else that there's an injury crisis in Connacht, and I don't see what could have possibly been lost by allowing Pat Lamb's son to just a short term stay for acceptance to play for as an emergency signing for Connacht with no extra cost involved.
Yeah, and they haven't issued a statement refuting any of this stuff just yet either.
No,
few, which,
no.
You know, you just want to get out there and say, look, the reasons we've done this are, because otherwise it starts to look like there's favourites.
When they feel they're on the high moral ground, they generally issue a statement fairly quickly.
Yeah, but like, so there is a sense abroad that perhaps in the Tartey situation, you have a head coach who is appointed by the director of rugby in David Nusafora, and so they need that to work. Pat Lamb is leaving anyway, so, you know, are you going to, the appearances, and I'm not saying that that is the motivation at all, but the appearances to the Connacht fans are like, well, hang on a second here, this doesn't make any sense.
And no, it looks awful. And there's no way around it. I'm looking at it from, and seeing it from a Munster perspective. Jaco Tautē, to the manner born, he was. He's the sort of Munster player that Munster have always tried to sign, and they managed to get him as a medical joker, and they want to hold on to him because I think everybody can see it, every fan can see it, every person who watches the game can see it, that this is a guy that has bought into the whole idea, and he's one of those players that we talk about from time to time, and Jerry named a list of them earlier on. Look, whatever happens with Connacht, something has to happen to help them out of this situation, because and that's where that's what I call them, they're rules, they're not laws. You know, we need to be able to look at them on a case-by-case basis. But let's take a big case and look at Connacht. And Connacht are struggling heavily. Connacht were always going to struggle this year because back-to-back matches from 1 year, from a huge stretch of matches that they had last year, to playing international matches, to not having breaks, to being targeted, to being at a higher level of competition.
Most of all that, Keith, playing in the European Champions Cup as opposed to the Challenge Cup. That was
Exactly. And that's incredibly physically taxing, as we can see from the numbers that are out there. We still need to support all our teams, however that can be done. So I don't know. And I don't know what the solution is on that either, I have to say.
Half an hour gone on the Spurs-Chelsea game and there's 32 minutes on the clock. It is still scoreless. Just briefly, Keith touched on the fixtures over the Christmas period, and the home teams all got to play their full teams. It did lead to a bunch of mismatches in the Interpros. Should the Interpros be fixed maybe, or won over the Christmas period, where it's agreed in September, okay, we'll have our full teams for that one, and then
okay, if you ask me, I'd say no, not just yet, because I think festive derbies work well. It lights on travel expenses for teams. You don't have to go abroad. If you get away with derbies, it means that teams have to travel abroad over the Christmas period. The rugby public is not stupid. They know what they're getting. It's been this way for a few years. It didn't stop Leinster winning down in Thomond Park last year. And bottom line, there were four full houses. All four games were sellouts. So for the moment, I'd say I'd go with it.
Yeah, they were sellouts, but a lot of people didn't show up who were season ticket holders to one of the Leinster games because they knew that what the situation was. Ulster were sending their B team. It was literally over after 15 minutes.
Yeah, and it wasn't a great game. And I'd be honest, I'd say I thought that the Munster-Leinster game in Thomond Park was outstanding. I thought Leinster's resilience in the first half, Munster going through that 23 phases to get that crucial try in overtime in the first half, I thought that was a really compelling encounter. Like I said, Leinster did win down there last year. Munster did win away to Connacht, so the away wins can happen. As Keith said earlier, it's not that different from most leagues in the world. You're not going to get your frontliners all through the season, and you are going to get preponderance of home wins, and generally teams are going to target their home games, so they want to show up in front of their home fans. So while it's not ideal, the other thing, the most important thing is we don't want our frontline players playing 6, 7 or 8 games in a row at this stage of the season. Every Irish supporter, roll on to St Patrick's weekend, wants Ireland as fully fit as possible and all their frontliners still being in two legs and taking on England in a potential championship decider, and we want all our Irish frontline players to be there.
Yeah.
But that means there has to be these intermittent weeks off. I know some of the players last week took a week's holidays abroad. That's not just refreshing physically, but it's mentally refreshing as well. Sure. It's bang in the middle of the season, and that's going to help them perform better in the Six Nations. And ultimately, that's the most important thing here.
Yeah. I wonder though, could you play your B team against Scarlets as opposed to Connacht or Munster or Ulster or Leinster?
It's the way the teams are set. It's the way the matches are set at this period of time. They've gone from autumn internationals to Champions Cup to knowing that there's going to be more Champions Cup again immediately after Christmas to Six Nations. All the matches are big games. If you call every game the most important game you're going to play, you're going to burn yourself out very, very promptly. These guys can't play at that level all the time. And I have to say, I looked at the Leinster team that was sent down to Munster, and I looked at it and I said, that's a good team. And I said, if Munster take anything for granted here, they could struggle. And Leinster were fantastic in it. So I thought they were competitive. The one game that didn't light it up was
Leinster-Ulster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ulster didn't turn up for 40 minutes. And it was interesting listening to Stephen Ferris absolutely
livid.
Have a right cut at Ulster from it. And Les Kiss had a reaction back afterwards to kind of complain about it, that he didn't think they didn't turn up. Well, they didn't turn up, and he obviously gave them a rollicking at half time because they did in the second half, and they were well off the mark. And in fairness to Leinster absolutely cut them asunder, were very, very efficient and did the right thing for them. And I still think that the fans got an awful lot out of it. They get a great level of entertainment and enjoyment on a Christmas weekend or a New Year's weekend. It's an opportunity to meet a lot of different friends and everything. And I think most of the home teams got something out of it. Connacht didn't in this instance.
All right, folks, as I said at the start, Happy New Year. Thanks very much for joining us.
And you.
Cheers.
It's Keith and Jerry with us every Wednesday night here on Off the Ball. Still scoreless, 35 minutes gone. We're going to take a break. We'll get Kev's reaction to the opening half hour or so at White Hart Lane right after these.
Off the Ball.
Get all the best bits at newstalk.com/offtheball with BetTac, the sports betting exchange for all your betting needs on desktop and on the BetTac app. Available from the App Store or on BetTac.com.